You're listening to the Man Project Podcast with your host, Ted Rice.
Would you like to be bigger, leaner, and stronger?
Do you want to develop the confidence to go after what you want in life? Or how about becoming the man that women want to be with?
We're here twice a week to empower you to reach your full potential
so you can live life on your own terms. Subscribe to our podcast or download our free app in the iTunes Store
or Google Play.
Find it all at manprojectpodcast.com. Now, back to the show.
Today's episode is with Srini Rao. And if you haven't heard of Srini, he hosts the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. And it's such an awesome show. It's a show that I look to for inspiration and to stay real, because unlike some of those more tactical podcasts out there that are trying to sell you something or just trying to market to you, he interviews happiness researchers, ex-bank robbers, drug dealers, people who've overcome depression, peak performance psychologists, best-selling authors like Seth Godin, and more. I mean, it is such an interesting podcast that really stands out from every other one. And what's really interesting about Srini and what he's created is I watched him at Podcast Movement. He said, you know, I'm not a podcaster. It's just a podcast is part of what I do to create this thing that's called Unmistakable Media, which is this grand sort of vision for the mark he wants to leave on the world and with his business. So I know you're going to enjoy this, especially because he's going to share his personal story about how he went to school and did all the things that everyone tells us to do to be successful in the world, and it just wasn't working for him. So he's going to share that story, share how he overcame that and found his own path and enjoys the success he does today with his business. And you're going to learn a lot from that, as well as be inspired and entertained. So without further ado, let's get to the interview with Srini Rao. Srini Rao, welcome to the Man Project.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, really, really happy to have you. It's been a long time coming. You gave this talk at Podcast Movement 2014 that really inspired me. You have this great show called The Unmistakable Creative, which really reaches outside the bounds of what most podcasts do. And I look to you as a mentor in that way. But hey, before we get into that, how's the surf in California?
You know, unfortunately, it's been kind of flat lately. I wish it was a bit better. And then I'm trying to do work and surf as much as possible. But the conditions have been pretty inconsistent lately.
Oh, man. Yeah. Do you have something else that you do when you can't surf? Something to get your mind?
Well, yeah. You know, it's funny. I finally realized I had to find something just because I was going insane. If I didn't, you of all people will appreciate this. I had to start moving my body somehow. So I started just running. I was like, okay, you know what? If I can't surf, I've got to somehow figure out how to make my body feel exhausted, or, you know, not exhausted in a bad way, but like really moves. You know, I do yoga at a hot yoga studio as well as go for runs in the morning. I mean, I'm not like a hardcore runner. I mean, I run about a mile, mile and a half, but at least it gets me moving.
Yeah, that's great. So Srini, you are the founder of Unmistakable Media, which includes your podcast, which we just talked about, the Instigator Experience. You have several books. Can you talk about what it is that you do for those listeners who haven't heard of you?
Yeah. You know, I think if really the bread and butter of it is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. And, you know, really it's a show where we tell stories about fascinating people and, you know, help people who are creative have breakthroughs in the work that they're doing. And so our guests actually range from graffiti artists to performance psychologists to entrepreneurs to authors to bank robbers to drug dealers. It's kind of been all over the gamut. But I think the one common thread that they all have is that somehow they have taken whatever it is that is going on in their life and caused it to move them in a pretty interesting direction and caused sort of radical breakthroughs and transformation in their own life. They're all models of possibility for the people who are listening. So, you know, we started 5 years ago with a show that was primarily focused on interviewing bloggers. But as the show grew, you know, we realized more and more that what was really striking a chord with our listeners wasn't interviewing bloggers, but the fascinating stories of people who were up to really interesting things in the world. And that people weren't as interested in how to make money online or sort of typical sort of tactical stuff, that didn't really gel. Whereas when we talked and told stories that were very universally relatable, when it came to things like human performance, when it came to things like, you know, creativity, it came to things that you could apply to any kind of work, regardless of what you were doing. I think the show just kind of took on a whole different direction. So we rebranded as The Unmistakable Creative. That was shortly after the book that you mentioned came out. You know, I self-published a book in 2013 called The Art of Being Unmistakable that ended up going on to become a Wall Street Journal bestseller. So really, I think the core of it is that if you think about it, maybe that the thing that I'm most known for, at least what I'm finding as I have more and more conversations, is the ability to get things out of people and to have them tell their stories in a way that they don't tell them anywhere else on the web.
Yeah, that's so well stated, and you're very successful at it. And I love what you said there. There are so many podcasts out there that basically it's like, oh, I'm going to interview this really well-known guest. So they'll share it. And it'll rocket ship my podcast into stardom, and I'm going to make a lot of money and hookers blow, travel around the world, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's one thing I really respect about what you do, but you've also made it successful. So you've found that balance between the art and doing mm-hmm. something that you're passionate about, but also created a business out of it, a successful one at that. I would love for you to share your backstory. I know you've shared it so many times at podcasts, sure. but it's such a powerful one because I know listeners, I've been in contact with listeners to my podcast who are in a situation like you were when you did all those things that society told you to do. So can you talk about your backstory?
Yeah, definitely. Like most people, I mean, I kind of had a very traditional career path right out of college, went to work at a couple of software startups, you know, in sales, basically was kind of pigeonholed into doing sales jobs, even though I sucked at them and I got fired from almost everyone. But, you know, I didn't realize that there was another way to do things. And I kept following this path that I thought was the right thing to do. Ended up at business school, Pepperdine, where I got an MBA. And then it was the summer between my first and second year of business school. I ended up being the social media strategy intern at Intuit and started tinkering with the web quite a bit. Not surprisingly, I didn't even get a job offer from Intuit at the end of my summer internship. But what had happened that summer was that I just got really, really interested in what you could do with the internet and the fact that you could make things with the internet. And the ability to make things with the internet was drastically changing at that time. Suddenly, people without a lot of knowledge of how to build something could actually put together a blog with almost no budget or anything like that. And so I needed a project because I was looking for a day job and I needed something to keep me busy. So what I did was I started a very simple blog called The School of Life. I was in this course and one of the lessons in the course was interview people. One of today's lesson is do an interview to get traffic to your blog. So I reached out to one guy, not realizing where that would ultimately lead me. And I said, hey, you know, I'm trying to complete lesson number 16 or 17. I just put a post in the forum and one guy responded. His name was Josh Hanagarney. And he ended up being my first interview. And he actually said, don't underestimate what this is going to do for you. So it went from being one interview to a weekly series called Interviews with Up-and-Coming Bloggers. And then after about 13, it evolved into a site called Blogcast FM, which was the name of the brand for many years. And then in 2013, after the book came out, we did a pretty massive brand overhaul and made it into what it is today, which is The Unmistakable Creative. Just because I think one of the big things that we realized with Blogcast FM is that we were misbranded. Our show wasn't just about blogging. And as a result, we were missing out on a pretty significant audience. Because if you came to the website or you found us on iTunes, you would think, okay, well, I'm not a blogger, so this isn't relevant to me, even though it was. And so once we realized that, we said, okay, our audience understands the brand even more than we do. It needs to be reflective in, you know, all our messaging and all our marketing. And so we just went balls to the wall with how creative this could be and how different this could be than anything else out there. And so I think that that has its pros and cons, right? Like we've often made guest selection choices at the cost of our numbers and at the cost of our metrics. Like we're not the ones who are making $1 million a month in advertising and having sponsors because of the fact that, like, to me, I guess the biggest priority has always been how do you serve the listeners and even do it at the cost of your own dollars, which, you know, I think there's a balancing act there. But, you know, to clutter the show with ads has never been really high on my priority list. And to be at the mercy of an advertiser in terms of guest selection is one of those things that I just didn't like, because you know, it's like, okay, well, we have to meet a certain number of downloads because this advertiser is advertising. So let's select guests based on that. Whereas we select guests based on what it is that makes us curious. And that comes with its challenges. I mean, you mentioned having a successful business. And what's interesting for us right now is that when we look back over the last couple of years, you know, I'm working with a new partner and he had a pretty keen observation. He said, you know, for a long time, the way this has existed has been as a hodgepodge of projects, some of which have been very profitable, but there hasn't been a sustainable business model. And that's really kind of our entire focus this year is to get this to the point of true sustainability so that we can keep doing what we do. I mean, fortunately, I think we've got a very, very loyal listener base who really I'm forever grateful for. I mean, the kinds of things that we get sent to us and the kinds of messages that people send us every day, I think that's a big part of why we keep coming back and doing this work.
Yeah, that's awesome. And if you haven't listened to Sereni's podcast, go to unmistakablecreative.com. Of course, that's going to be in the show notes in case you're driving or working out or on a run right now. But Sereni, one thing, you didn't make money right away because I have some people who listen to the show who I've spoken with. And they're like, yeah, you know, I want a podcast one day and I want to do a podcast and I want to get into online business. It's so funny because I don't really focus on that at all, even though I've interviewed a few people who I guess give suggestions on that. But can you set people straight with what the real reason they should get into podcasting or blogging or anything like that, anything online?
Yeah, I mean, mainly because they're interested or that they're curious. I mean, if you start out thinking, hey, you know, I'm going to push a few buttons and make a lot of money and throw up a website, I think you're setting yourself up for disappointment fairly quickly. And that's the thing. I mean, you think about it, right? We've been at this for half a decade at this point, and, you know, only a crazy person would keep at it that way. I think that you have to have a genuine interest in it and you have to come at it from an angle of, okay, what can I do that is of service to other people? Because I think that I gave a talk yesterday about what it means to build a community from scratch. And I said, you know, you show up to take from a community, they'll never give you anything. You show up to serve that community and they'll give you everything. And that's really what it comes down to. So it's like, what unique contribution can you make to the world? And what were you put here to do? I mean, I think that part of what drives me to do this is my own frustrations with where I ended up career-wise and thinking, okay, we can create the kind of educational content that could drastically alter the course of somebody's adult life so that they get to spend their life doing work that they love and work that matters to them. And we can play a role in that through the kind of educational experience that we provide. And I guess the only reason this is coming up is because it was fresh on my mind. I was like, why is this important to me? I was writing about it this morning. And I was like, well, it's important to me because I spent so many years really, truly hating what I was doing and operating outside of, you know, I guess the guy Gay Hendricks came up with this concept called the zone of genius, but doing work that really didn't fulfill me or put me into flow in any way at all. And doing work that was just kind of a grind.
Yeah. I love hearing that personally. I know it's very important for the listeners to hear it because a lot of them are going through similar situations like you've been in the past. I like hearing it personally because, man, I never went down that road. Not really. Well, I've been in fitness since I was 22. I kind of said fuck you to everyone and everything who told me what to do and just went my own way. And that included my parents, did not want me going into fitness. So I love hearing that. You know, one thing you said, you need to serve your audience and you need to be a giver, not a taker. I get that. I think a lot of people hear that and go, yeah, well, of course. But, you know, I had a conversation with someone the other day and they were saying, yeah, I'm giving all this stuff. I'm putting all this stuff up to help people, but they're not responding to it. And it kind of makes me upset. And I'm like, I really feel like people don't really get what that means to be a giver. Can you go a little deeper into that and how you look at that and how you know you're giving instead of doing something to put yourself in the spotlight or to get attention or anything else that's self-serving?
Yeah. I mean, to some degree, it's all a bit self-serving, but I think it really comes down to intention. It's weird, right? Anytime I start something with the intention of trying to raise some metric or to inflate my ego, it becomes very apparent in the quality of the work. Something just changes. Whereas I think if I start out with the thought that, okay, no matter how many people this reaches, as long as somebody benefits from it, then great. And what's interesting is it's very counterintuitive, right? Like you do that and suddenly the work starts to have a ripple effect that you couldn't predict. I mean, you know, I got an email just a few days ago from a listener and it was very touching because it was kind of like, wow, we're really making a difference in this person's life. And he said, you know, you guys are having a ripple effect far beyond any measure that you can imagine. And that was one of the most amazing things to hear from somebody in your community. And to me, I think that one is that that's one of the greatest rewards that comes from it. But I don't think you can start out. Maybe the big thing that I'm trying to say is that if you start with this idea that you're seeking validation, then you're hosed from the get-go.
Yeah. And I think you made a great point there. If you're getting, I think when you do the right things, you get the right results. People reach out to you and let you know. And if you're not getting that, there's probably something wrong with what you're doing and you need to reevaluate it.
So, no doubt.
Yeah. Cool, man. And another important lesson that I've heard you mention before is you did all this. You left your job, left what most people would consider a more stable environment, although that's arguable, but that's how most people perceive it, to start this unmistakable media and with the end result not really being predictable. Like, I guess what I'm trying to ask is, how do you keep going in terms of just plowing through and keep doing what you're doing and keep trying new things, even though some things don't work out and some things do? How do you get to the point where, because I know you weren't successful right off the bat, it took time, like every single business. How do you keep going if you're doing something and you're not sure how it's going to end up?
Boy, that's a good question. You know, I mean, think about it this way, right? Is that outcomes that are completely predictable don't necessarily lead us to those magical places in life. The most magical things that can happen in our lives are the byproduct of our willingness to cope with a lot of uncertainty. And so I think that that's sort of the emotional cost of doing this kind of work is, can you cope with the uncertainty? Can you cope with the possibility that it will fail? Can you cope with the possibility that you could have spent all that time, effort, and money on something else that was guaranteed to work? And I think that that's just part of it, is just accepting that. I don't know that there's any tactical way to handle this. I've been thinking a lot about this in the last year or so, you know, and questioning, where do you draw the line? When do you say, okay, that's it, I should quit? And that's a hard one, you know. It's just like some people say that you might have spent way too long working on something and you've wasted years of your life. And I'd like to think I haven't. But part of it really is learning to see that the only way you get to experience those things is by doing the things that aren't guaranteed to work. I mean, nothing that you see that has been wildly successful was the byproduct of somebody said, you know what, I know with 100% certainty that this is going to work. That's just not possible.
Yeah, it's not possible. Cool. I was curious how you looked at that. Yeah, and one thing that you do that's really cool and very different than everyone else out there is you really have a strong artistic quality to everything that you do. I mean, when I look at your website, when I watched several of your videos that you did, it was just like, this guy gets it. He's going for the aesthetic, the artistic quality. And when you and I had a little exchange and you said basically you weren't interested in talking to people who are just all about the marketing. And I think so many people, they understand like, well, marketing, it's all about marketing. That's what gets you in front of people. That's what gets people to buy things. So how do you strike the balance between taking that artistic approach to what you do, but also making it a success?
That's an interesting question. And it's kind of the real kind of core of what I talked about when it came to building a community in the talk that I gave yesterday. You know, I always say, think like an artist, not a marketer. And I think that here's what I would say, and I'm going to just kind of repeat what I had said in that talk. You know, when you think like an artist, you push edges. And when you think like a marketer, you play it safe. When you think like an artist, you build a community and you build a tribe. When you think like a marketer, you're building an audience. When you think like an artist, you look for ways to increase meaning. And when you think like a marketer, you look for ways to increase metrics. And it's a really, really counterintuitive mindset. But what I've found fairly consistently is, when you approach it as an artist, there's a purity that comes with everything that you do that I think is felt in the work and in the way it comes across to the people who consume it. And the result, of course, is that a lot of those marketing things take care of themselves. I mean, I'm not saying that you completely ignore them, you know, like I'm not saying don't look at how many people are subscribing to your email list, don't have metrics. But I think that it really comes down, it kind of takes us back to that whole idea of intention, right? I mean, I think about, okay, is this a beautiful piece of art? Do I want to sign my name to it regardless of how many people have read it, consumed it, or whatever? Like when I look at it, can I say, okay, I'm proud that that exists in the world? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And You know, I love that. And it's interesting because in the fitness business, you may or may not be aware of this, but all the personal trainers, man, they all have the starving artist mentality. They're like, I love this. I do it for the passion. And they're broke. And most trainers get out of the business. And I actually interviewed, I have another show that's for fitness professionals. And I interviewed this one guy and he was like, listen, you know, Jesus Christ said, he said what he believed and he got nailed up on the cross. You got to get out there and say what you need to say and get out there and express yourself artistically, no matter what the result. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, dude, you're making six figures, man. Come on, you know, like for a person who has kids to feed and stuff to do, it just wasn't really real. No, it's just interesting to hear that. I'm curious, how do you stay artistic? How do you stay like curious, artistic, and make sure you approach everything you do with that perspective of an artist?
I think you really hit the nail on the head with one thing you said, curious, right? Everything that I do, I think really is fueled by my curiosity. More than anything else, it's like, okay, this is a batshit crazy idea. I wonder what'll happen if we try it. The good example, I don't know if you saw my post on Facebook this morning about it's your turn, what are you going to do about it? Because we just interviewed Seth Godin.
Yeah.
And I threw out probably the most audacious idea. You know, a friend and I were at a party a few nights ago talking about events. And we said, well, what if you could do this event that you love so much for free? Like, what if you could make it free for the attendees? What if you could pay your speakers? What if you could walk away with a profit? And what if you could donate some of the proceeds to charity? All batshit crazy constraints, right? I mean, it's never been done before. It sounds damn near impossible. And I thought, that is actually interesting. I'm like, I'm really curious about how it might happen. Let's just throw it out into the world and see. So more than anything, I think curiosity is one of those things that allows me to maintain that artistic mindset. And then the other part of it is the stimulus that I kind of put in my world to consume. I don't listen to a lot of business podcasts. I don't listen to a lot of podcasts in general. I look at movies. I look at different sources of art and different types of art for my inspiration. If you remember the podcast Movement Speech, I talked a bit about my 30-day drawing project.
The Apple.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it just, visual art has always been a big influence in how I do things. And I realized I myself didn't have to be a visual artist, but I could collaborate with a lot of them, which was pretty cool. So yeah, I mean, that's really the way I look at it as far as maintaining that artistic component. A friend told me, he said, I think that the real gist is create what's in your heart and then we'll figure out what to do with it. And that to me is, I guess, the biggest thing about how you maintain that artistic integrity. Because everything that I've ever tried to create that wasn't really truly in my heart and that was intended to get some sort of result, and that's all I cared about, the work was so different. It's funny, we're working on this new writing project called The Compass, which, you know, people can learn about at theinstigatorscompass.com. And you know, when I got done, my friend said, he's like, this is the best work you've done in a really long time. He said, it looks like you're creating from the heart again. And the thing is that I think when you create that kinds of stuff, it's like when it's all said and done, I can look at it and say, you know what, regardless of what happens, I'm proud of the work that I did there.
Cool. Yeah. So putting things out there where you feel like, you know what, I really did my best, whatever it ended up as, I really did my best and I approached it from my heart, trying to be an artist, trying to connect with people emotionally and trying to make a difference. Cool, man. Like we talked about in the beginning, you're really into surfing and now you're running and you do yoga. And we talked a bit before, actually, I believe you shared in your podcast Movement Talk, you were going through some rough times. How does health and fitness help you deal with the ups and downs of entrepreneurship and just the ups and downs of life?
I think it's actually a fitting question considering who I'm talking to. I got to say, I didn't realize how critical health and fitness is. And you know, I'm sure you're probably familiar with this work. Came across this book as a recommendation from one of our former guests, a guy named John Rady, who is a doctor.
Spark.
Wrote a book called Spark. And I mean, he went through all the things that are like just difficult ailments like stress, anxiety, depression, and almost all of them, you could point to exercise being the one thing that made all of them significantly better. I'd had moments of anxiety and semi-depression at times, but never anything like I'd experienced in the last summer and from May till God. I mean, I think it went almost through the end of Christmas. And then it just lifted one day. It was really weird. But I mean, throughout the entire process, I mean, maybe the biggest realization was that, okay, what's my first line of defense here? What's the one thing I can control? How I use my physical body and what I put into my physical body? Because again, you of all people probably know this more in depth than I do. Like there's an insane amount of things that chemically happen when we exercise, when we eat properly and all of that. And the thing is that as an entrepreneur, I think this is probably the greatest lesson I've learned in the last year. The hardest thing about doing this kind of work is learning to manage your own psychology. And I think exercise plays a really important role in you being able to handle sort of the pendulum swings of things going well and shit hitting the fan. Because if you remember my podcast movement speech, didn't start out with me in depression. It started out with me on top of the world.
Yeah.
I mean, I accomplished in 9 months what a lot of people probably couldn't do in 10 years. You know, I mean, we pulled off a conference. We pulled off a best-selling book that sold 15,000 copies. We pulled off a massive rebrand. It was as if I could do no wrong. Like, literally everything I touched turned to gold. And I think that the very nature of this is that I don't think that you can avoid what is, you know, sort of referred to as the dark night of the soul. And what's interesting is I thought it was very like isolated to me. And the more that I started to research it, it turns out that this is actually, you know, quite common among founders, but we've treated it as a very taboo subject. Mental health is one of those things that we're kind of like, oh, well, you know, you're fucking crazy because you see a therapist. It's like, actually, it's pretty highly recommended now by almost everybody. I mean, even Tucker Max talks about this on his podcast. And it's interesting, right? Because I think that the idea of getting help when you're dealing with any mental health issue, there's a huge stigma around it culturally, right? And I think that that actually has done us a disservice as a society, because I look at it now, I'm like, shit, I should have done this sooner. I'm like, it would have solved a lot of problems if I sat down and walked into an office of a therapist and just talked through my issues with somebody who is completely unbiased, somebody who's not a friend, somebody who's, you know, got a third party perspective. You know, I mean, I'm giving you a very long answer to your question.
No, it's great. And I really appreciate you sharing all this. So please continue.
So like one, I think the fact that we're willing to finally have this conversation is actually a good thing and to admit it. But here's the thing. I mean, it's funny. I think somebody came up to me afterwards. And the weird thing is when you talk about something like that, everybody comes and tells you all their issues.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's like, happened to me before. Yep.
I'm like, all right, I'm sorry that you're going through that, but you need to go get professional help. I'm like, I didn't tell you that story so that you could come and talk to me. I'm like, I'm not a therapist. I have no fucking idea how to deal with your problems.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, it's really interesting because we're encouraged to present these very superhuman versions of ourselves online. And I think that the fact that we're now able to say, okay, you know what? We're kind of screwed up. We're vulnerable, whatever. We make mistakes. We're not perfect. I think that, you know, you go from sort of being put on this pedestal to being relatable. What's interesting is that I think the big perception I wanted to clear up was, okay, I went through a period of depression. That doesn't mean I am this miserable, unhappy soul at all times. In fact, you know, before that period, I was pretty damn stoked all the time because all I did was surf, create stuff I love. Again, you know, I think that you can't really do great work if you're that miserable. You really can't. I think you have to be in a very stable mental state. So long answer to a short question, what is the role that exercise and fitness has played? It went up pretty significantly in that period because I realized, okay, if I take care of my body, the emotional ups and downs are going to be a lot. Well, they're just going to stabilize. The pendulum won't swing back and forth as much. And, you know, I see this with people who don't exercise. It's very clear that they become very depressed. And I mean, you of all people probably know, I mean, and you've probably seen radical changes in somebody's life when they get into a mode of, okay, time to exercise. And so, yeah, I mean, and the funny thing is it becomes addictive because you're like, okay, now I'm just addicted to feeling good. Why the hell wouldn't I want to do this all the time?
Yeah, man. Well, thanks for sharing that. And thanks for the compliments, but I love hearing about other people's story, and it's really important because you're not a health fitness professional. You're the founder of what you do, of Unmistakable Creative, and so it's really important that listeners hear it from someone like yourself, and you mentioned my story. Yeah, you know, a lot of that shit I dealt with, well, it's been going on for a long time is a better way to put it. And I'm 38 now. I was seeing psychologists and psychiatrists since I was 14, since my mom died, you know, on and off, and then with my brother and all that. So I never really had that stigma. And like I said before, I had a fuck you attitude for a long, and still kind of do in a way. I just do my own thing and I don't listen to other people. And I don't know, because of my life, it's been kind of like that for me. It's, I don't know, a coping mechanism or all those things kind of develop my identity to that way, like a survival mechanism or whatever. But no, thanks for sharing that. I'm curious though, was that something that happened in your life? Was there an event, or was it just like all of a sudden you did all these successful things, going surfing, launched an event, doing all this great stuff, and then all of a sudden you just wake up one day and you just feel bad.
No, I mean, it wasn't. I just woke up one day and felt bad. It was a series of events, a couple of things all at once, you know, like loss of money, loss of people in my life. Just suddenly things changed very drastically overnight, and it was just very difficult for me. A lot of things just started going wrong all at once after they had been going really right for, because, I mean, if you think about it, you know, you spend all this time working really hard. And suddenly, again, you know, I had a lot of things go wrong all at once, and it started to feel like my world was spinning out of control, and I started to feel like I was losing everything that mattered to me. Not only was I losing everything that mattered, more and more I was having a difficult time seeing any vision for my future. And if you've listened to one of our recent podcasts with a guy named Jim Bunch, who talks about designing environments for creativity and performance, he said the darkest place for anybody to be is when they can't see any vision for their future. And I felt like I was trying to see a vision for my future, and it was just one that I was fighting to get to, but one that I was completely out of alignment with.
Wow. Well, cool. Well, thanks for sharing that. So it was spurred on by a loss of several different types, and that put you into a tailspin for a little while, and you were able to pull out of it and use fitness for that. You used nutrition for that, it sounds like. What other things did you do to get a hand? And you started seeing someone. So what else did you do to sort of get you back?
So, I mean, in between fitness, nutrition, you know, and a lot of conversations with friends and conversations with friends who are willing to listen to you say the same thing over and over again. You know, I mean, I think those are the big things. And then I think the next sort of big thing was I became very conscious about what it is that I was putting in my mind on a day-to-day basis. I started to become a lot more sensitive to the information that was going in my brain, like listening to stuff that was uplifting, you know, really putting a stop to watching anything that could be considered harmful. So I'll give you an example that I may have shared before. One of my friends turned me on to Sons of Anarchy, which is a pretty entertaining TV show, I have to say. But I got through, I think, 4 or 5 episodes. And, you know, I got to the point where there's this really, really graphically violent scene. And I was watching it at like 9:30 or 10 before I went to bed. And I'm thinking, this can't be good. You know, I mean, and so I couldn't watch it anymore after that. And last year, a friend, you know, who was staying with me for a while, he said, man, he's like, you can't watch stuff like 24 before you go to sleep. He's like, this is not good for your heart. You know, it's not relaxing to watch shit like this. So I think becoming sort of very conscious of about, you know, what it is that I put in my mind, or I think you stand guard at the door of your mind, because that's one of your most precious assets, as this guy Jim Bunch said in one of our recent interviews.
That is awesome advice, and something that I've said here on the podcast, especially with regards to news. At least you're watching Sons of Anarchy and, you know, trying to get your entertainment on, instead of some people who watch news are like, oh, what are you talking about? I got to watch news. I got to stay informed. How are you going to stay informed? It's like, okay, so hearing about a war in a country you probably can't even find on a fucking map is it means you staying informed. I'm sorry, but that's just masturbation for you. You're just getting your jollies off on that. And it's not, more importantly, you're trying to argue with me about politics and world geopolitical climates. And I don't care, man. I'm just taking actions. And I asked the guy, I was like, is this helping you day to day? Is this helping you in your relationship with your wife? Is it helping you achieve your goals? Is it helping you to stay motivated? And the answer was no. And even more importantly than all of those things, it's like, are you taking this information about this thing that's going on in another country that you'll probably never go to? Are you taking action on it other than just maybe saying something on social media? Are you trying to make a difference? And the answer was no. And it's just like, okay, so you're basically getting high off of those emotions. And so thank you for repeating that, because I think it's really important. We need to control what comes in our minds. And a lot of people are down a dark road that they don't have to be down, simply because they're just, oh, did you see ISIS cut off someone's head again, or whatever it is, like whatever they have in the media. I don't watch the news. I get my news from Facebook feeds these days, and, you know, I don't pay much attention to it. And if someone constantly puts up negative stuff, I unfollow them or unfriend them. So thanks for putting that up and sharing that.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, something I heard you talk about is that you had a mentor help you take things to the next level. How do you look at mentors? And what were you doing before? Were you just kind of doing everything on your own, going to conferences, and then you found a guy? Yeah, what were you doing and why the mentor?
I think that part of it is I was just trying things and throwing spaghetti against the wall to see what sticks. And I think that the interesting thing is that a mentor can kind of look at and they can see things in you that you can't see in yourself. And then what they can do is they can guide you in a direction. They can kind of say, okay, this is where, like, they can take all your efforts and all your actions and focus them on the thing that will lead to the most optimal outcome for you. And of course, you know, there's got to be some incentive for them. I mean, he took an ownership percentage in our company. And so that's the thing I think.
Should go on Shark Tank, man. You got Kevin O'Leary working with you, or?
No. A guy named Greg Hartle, who, you know, if you went through our archives, you could listen to his interviews. But a big part of it really is taking what you're good at and focusing it in a way that you couldn't do on your own. And I think that that's really critical and kind of guiding you. Because here's the thing, right? I mean, what a mentor does is not only can they see what you can't see in yourself, they've done things that you haven't done before. And so it actually prevents you from spinning your wheels and having a lot of trial and error.
Yeah. No, well said. Yeah. So if you don't have a mentor in your life and you're trying to accomplish something, whether that's getting to the next level in your fitness, in your business, with your relationships, maybe you need some counseling because of something you're going through. You could look at that type of person as a mentor as well to get you through those times. Make sure you find that. I think guys in particular, Srini, we're like, no, you ask for directions, then you know it means that you're less of a man, when the opposite is actually true. I mean, I work with very, very successful entrepreneurs in my personal training business here in Miami Beach. They have something for every area of their life. And that usually includes me to work on their physical body, on their health. So very, very important stuff. Well, cool, man. So Srini, where can they find out more about you other than the unmistakablecreative.com?
That's the big one. And it's actually unmistakablecreative.com, although we should probably go buy the domain theunmistakablecreative.com.
You know, I just thought about that. Please go to unmistakablecreative.com.
No worries. I run this small little blog called unmistakableceo.com. You know, not a lot of people read it. It's just honestly for me and my personal thoughts, but some people find it interesting and useful. So that's one other place I would send people.
Okay. unmistakableceo.com. Mm-hmm. Awesome. And Srini, first of all, thank you so much for giving me this interview and sharing your experiences as an entrepreneur, as someone who's gone through the ups and downs and the roller coaster of entrepreneurship and come out the other side. Although I know you're still working on stuff, just like every other entrepreneur, no matter how successful, from the startup that just happened yesterday to Richard Branson. But do you have some final words of inspiration for the listeners to take action? Because so many of us will listen to things and we'll be like, we feel like getting that information makes us better in some way, but really it's taking that information and doing something with it. So do you have some final words of inspiration to get the listeners, the guy listening right now, to take some action in his life?
Yeah, you know, here's the interesting thing. And I had to get back to the basics of this myself because I was beyond frustrated because I was failing at very big projects, like things weren't working. And I was like, okay, I'm just a huge failure because I'm failing at trying to do things that are, you know, a lot of people would actually fail at. And so I started to think about, okay, how did I create momentum in the past to get to this like level of crazy, you know, unstoppable force type of momentum that I had experienced? And I realized what it came down to was really, really small things on a daily basis and recognizing, okay, I win in some way every single day. I have a victory, not like a gratitude journal, but a victory. Like, for example, you know, we were talking about my running earlier. I was like, wow, I'm like, okay, because I'm not, you know, fit enough that I can run the entire circle that I run. And I usually have to stop and walk. And I was like, wow, I'm like, today I was able to run for 30 seconds more. It's like, oh, wait a minute, that straightaway that I normally have to stop at, I was able to get past that stoplight and go another 15, 20 seconds. I'm like, that's a small victory. And then tomorrow that becomes 30. It's like, okay, you know, I wrote 1,000 words and I was struggling, or I wrote one good sentence. It's like, that's a small victory. Somebody sent me a nice email. It's like, that's a small victory. So I think part of it is building these little wins and they all just keep adding up until next thing you know, you've got this snowball that turns into an avalanche.
Got it. So small wins daily, if you can, over time, leads up to big momentum, snowballs into much bigger success. Srini Rao, thank you so much for being on The Man Project. And Thank you for those last powerful words of advice. The pleasure is all mine, man.
You've reached the end of another episode of The Man Project. Connect with us at manprojectpodcast.com. Don't forget to sign up to our newsletter to receive our free tools. See you next episode.